Welcome to this week's episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. I'm so excited for you to listen to today's episode with registered dietitian Amber Thomas. Amber is a dietitian who specializes in cancer nutrition and intuitive eating. She provides online nutrition counseling to both men and women who have faced a cancer diagnosis. She speaks at local and national events for cancer nutrition and will soon be offering a membership site for cancer survivors. She helps her clients stay nourished during and after cancer treatment, overcoming their food fears, and ultimately empowers each person to embrace food in the survivorship journey. You guys, this was such a fascinating episode because the reality is life happens, right? Things happen, bad things happen, and people get sick, and that is a part of life. And we would be doing you a disservice if we didn't talk about how intuitive eating intersects those challenging aspects of life. And what do we do when we are faced with a serious medical diagnosis? How does intuitive eating fit into that? Amber gives some excellent tips of how you can best support somebody who has received this diagnosis and really just how to support anybody who is going through a difficult time, those times in life where we don't know what to say and we're afraid of saying the wrong thing or doing the wrong thing. So grab a notebook. I hope you really pay attention because, like I said, regardless of how this impacts your life, I think you're really going to get a lot from this episode. All right, on to the show. Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour, a podcast about all things nutrition, fitness, and life in your 20s and 30s, all from a non-diet lens. I'm your host, Katie Hake, and I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist and certified personal trainer. Join me here every week as I talk with interesting people and experts from all walks of life about their relationship with food, exercise, and their bodies. I am on a mission to help you redefine the word fit, to help you stop quantifying and start living. Learn to stop measuring your success by the scale and find your fears. Amber, welcome to the podcast. We're so excited to have you.
Thank you so much, Katie, for having me on today.
So I'm excited about this topic today. I think, unfortunately, everybody knows somebody who has gone through cancer, either directly or indirectly. So let's start with just your story. You know, tell us about yourself. What's your story with food and fitness, and how did you become a dietitian?
Sure. So my story's maybe not typical. I didn't know I wanted to be a dietitian. In fact, when I went to college, that was not what I started. Growing up, I was an intuitive eater. So it wasn't something that, you know, food and nutrition was something that I really thought about very much. But I went to college for athletic training. I have no clue why. I wasn't super athletic. I didn't really like coordinated sports. But, you know, I think my sister, who I adore, was really into sports. And I thought, well, okay, that makes sense. I'll just do that thing. And nutrition was my minor. And I'm so lucky that someone in the athletic training program told me, hey, you know, you're probably going to want to double major as a teacher so that you can get a job. And nope, that's not something I'm interested in. I do not want to, you know, teach at a high school and do their athletic training program. I will just jump out of that program and I might as well just make my minor my major. So that's how I started in the nutrition program. And for a while there, I wasn't sure that I wanted to continue because I kind of felt like a fraud sometimes going through some of the coursework, having so much emphasis on a certain type of eating patterns. Like, oh, I don't always eat like that. Okay, this is interesting. But I stuck with it. And in turn, it made a lot of sense in the end. Like, I've had a lot of family history of cancer. And that's something that I gravitated toward. So I didn't want to help anyone lose weight or have any sort of restrictions around eating. I wanted to help people nourish their bodies and to help them stay strong. And with a family history of cancer, so I've had multiple family members be diagnosed with cancer and ultimately die from cancer, it made a lot of sense to me on a personal level that this was something I'm passionate about. So that's kind of how I got into nutrition, why I stayed around. And then my story about working with cancer nutrition and adding the added benefit of intuitive eating came from years of working with people in hospitals and cancer clinics. But I can remember very specific people who led me to want to question the way that I was counseling people in the cancer center, or the kind of questions that people would ask me. It was very, give me the list of foods. I want the list that says I can eat only these foods. I have to stay away from these foods forever. What's going to prevent my cancer from coming back or progressing? And there's so much fear around food, and it was not a joyful way to live. And it made me pause and think, you know, there's got to be something more. There's got to be something
while you
else.
Were in, while you were actually like in a clinical type setting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. People would come to me for one-on-one appointments in the cancer clinic, and I would see a lot of people on treatment. So as they're going through really, really tough time, and that piece of the nutrition story looks different than once people are done with treatment. Mm-hmm. And usually when the dust settles after treatment, the fear and worry about the cancer returning comes in full force. And then that's when the diet piece comes in. So there were a lot of conversations with people talking them down, essentially, about, you know, you don't need to track your food this closely. How does this make you feel when you're writing down all of the foods you're eating, judging them with a smiley face or a frowny face? And how does life feel with that? Yeah. Or I just need, you know, tell me exactly what to eat. I can't do that. That's not beneficial for you at all. Mm-hmm. So it was probably by now 3 or 4 years ago. So 2017 or 18. I started really looking into the intuitive eating approach and how it can really benefit people both going through cancer treatment and after. And I think I was doing parts of this without knowing that I was doing it, but it made so much sense when I finally got a hold of the literature, started reading the books and saying, oh, there is absolutely a framework for how we can help people move out of that fear and really step into nourishing themselves.
I love that you say it. It just makes sense because I hear that time and time again with dietitians that I interview who take an intuitive eating approach and even clients too. And I feel the same way. It's once you see the literature, I mean, even before then, you're like, it just makes sense. It makes so much sense. So is that kind of what led you then to start private practice, to practice in a way that felt like lined up with this intuitive eating model? What did that look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So I felt like the approach I was taking could definitely fit in with the philosophy of the cancer center and the place that I worked. But there were some things bigger going on in the hospital setting that I did not agree with. And it was not something that I felt like I could continue. I could not work under the organization and the structure that they had. So instead of looking for another job, which would essentially be a linear move, me going from this cancer center to another cancer center, because that's where my specialty and training and passion is, it made sense for me to just jump out of that world and start something on my own so that I could really hone in on helping people the way that I felt led to help people. And it has been a game changer for sure, you know, both professionally and personally, you know, because I've got two little boys at home and I love spending time with them. And I love the flexibility of working for myself and making my own schedule.
Yeah, that's empowering and great to hear that you made a move that aligned with what it was that you were looking for. Yeah. So I want to jump into some of the major myths around cancer and nutrition, because you mentioned that this fear is so common. And I think so many people can relate to that, whether it's cancer, whether it's any type of health risk, you know, there's this notion that food is medicine. And so let's talk about that. What are some of those major myths that you see?
Yeah. So you mentioned food is medicine, and I am absolutely guilty of telling people that during, you know, their treatment when they needed to really focus on the nourishment piece. And I realize now that that's not helpful. It reframes food in a negative light for a lot of people.
I will say, when you say guilty, I am guilty as well. I'm pretty sure there's a podcast episode, if you scroll back, that talks about like food is medicine. So, sorry to interrupt. Keep going.
No, absolutely. But you know, it makes sense on some levels, but it depends on our perspective, right? So when I say food is medicine, I want you to reframe it more as food is self-care. And now I know the difference between the two. So, you know, we would tell people you just need to eat X amount of food, X amount of times a day. Here's your timetable. Just go forth and do this thing, and it will really help you during treatment. But there's a lot of black and white around that. There was a lot of, oh, I failed today. You know, oh, I did good today. And it led to a lot of guilt during, you know, some really, really tough times people were having that wasn't helpful. So, yeah, definitely reframed why we ask you to eat the types of foods. It is, you know, you're in allyship with your body. Your body needs nourishment. You need to stay strong. We do not want to lose weight during treatment, no matter the body size you start at.
That's so weight loss, key.
Yeah, weight loss, significant weight loss during treatment affects treatment tolerance. It affects your ability to get the full dose of treatment. Pauses in treatment can affect your survivorship rate. It's a big deal. So we need to make sure that weight loss isn't the silver lining for treatment, that it's something that we really take seriously and embrace the need for nourishment. But yeah, food is medicine. It's a big one.
Psst. It's me, Katie. And in case you haven't already noticed, I kind of care about you getting results. Now, I'm not talking about results as far as body fat composition or the number on the scale, but I'm talking about implementing the things that you are learning here each and every week. Head on over to Facebook and just search Fit Friends Tribe to request to join our group. This is a free Facebook community where we talk about the podcast episodes each week, and I give you action steps on how to implement what it is that we talked about so that you're not just listening, learning, and absorbing information, but you're part of that top percent, that top 2% that actually takes action and changes their life. So facebook.com, search Fit Friends Tribe. I'm going to ask you a few questions to make sure you're not some weirdo from Antarctica, and we'll let you in. See you there. All right, back to the show.
The other one that I see and get questions about, number one, by far, is sugar and cancer risk. Not only sugar cancer risk, but risk of progression, risk of recurrence. And there's just so much fear around sugar. And it makes sense. I mean, culturally speaking, sugar is vilified across the board in everything. So why wouldn't it make sense for it to be even worse with cancer?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I can tell you the science and the research behind it. I mean, I can tell you that there aren't studies that can provide a direct relationship to consuming sugar and having cancer risk increase, having a progression risk increase, or having a risk of recurrence increase. We don't have the literature to support that. But that doesn't mean it still feels like the worst food you could eat. That the fear is so deeply driven inside of us for some of these foods because, one, we enjoy them. We don't think we should have them. And therefore, we have this guilt and restriction around it. And then we know that with those levels of restriction, something gives, something happens, and we go all the way over, you know, the pendulum swings from restriction to binge, you know, to eating more than maybe you're comfortable eating. And then the cycle continues. So instead of having a lot of that fear, you know, with me, with my clients, when we talk about sugar, and there is not a single person that I've not counseled that this is not one of the big conversations we have, that we remember the literature and we know what's out there in science. We know that the science that we do have is basically cell studies. And we cannot take that information and apply it directly to our human experience. It doesn't work like that. Even animal studies cannot translate directly into human. They are helpful information. It's a place to start, but it is absolutely not something that we can provide to people and say, here's the research. This is what you should do. No. It doesn't work that way in the human body. We are so complex that looking at, you know, cells in a petri dish is on a completely and so uncoupled level from the human body. But that's, you know, where a lot of the fear comes from. Well, we have information. Yeah, but it's not the right kind of information to really help.
It's so interesting that, you know, because I talk about this with clients as well, but like, it's just interesting hearing it saying from a cancer perspective, because you're right. Mm-hmm. That is such a specific topic that I would imagine that I'm sure clients hear the word cancer diagnosis and they immediately run to Dr. Google and start typing in and looking for an answer. What about, you know, because I spent some time doing counseling with the Live Strong group, like at the YMCAs, and I would get all these questions about, you know, these special shakes and magic supplements. And do you see that? And what are some of the myths around that?
Yes, I see those kind of in cycles. So something will become popular. And there are so many things that I can't even keep up. And I'm a specialist in this area. And I'm like, what? Hold on. What shake is this? Or what diet are you talking about? Okay.
It always makes me laugh. I don't know if you feel the same way, but it always makes me kind of chuckle a little bit when people are like, oh, you've heard of this, right? And you're like, you know, you would think I'd have heard of this after talk. I talk about food all day, every day, but no, that's a new one.
Right. Exactly. I'm like, yeah, I actually am not familiar with that. I will have to do some research. So there are tons of things, tons of supplements that people want to sell and fear sells. Mm-hmm. So yeah, most of the time when I have people, you know, I need to take the supplement or someone said that this is really going to help. I'm like, okay, well, you know what? I have an unbiased resource that I can look up that product for you. And let's just see what that says. And then you can make your own decision. So as long as they aren't on a treatment where, you know, it's contraindicated. So, yep, you should not be taking that because it may affect your chemo. It may affect your cells so that your chemo, your radiation, other treatments, conventional treatments, treatments that have been studied and that work, it doesn't interfere. So sometimes that can be really helpful for people to see like, oh, okay, there either is research on this and it says this, or there's no research on it. And that also tells us something. Mm-hmm. And people can make their own decisions. Absolutely. But I want them to make an informed decision based on the available information that we have and go from there. But I mean, I'm not a person who recommends supplements. There are a very few amount of supplements that I will recommend based on a person's treatment and GI effects and things like that. But it's so customized that just to, you know, list something point blank, no, like there's nothing that I can say, yep, everyone needs to take this. Everyone needs to do this. These are fine. We need to do some research into that. But yeah, if something says it's magic, run the other way. If something says it's going to, you know, cure or do something incredible, run, because chances are they're just going to take your money and you won't have any of the benefit that's supposedly, you know, purported for that product.
Yeah. And talking about fear, I mean, that's such a vulnerable state to be in, getting mm-hmm. this diagnosis. I mean, I would imagine that I would feel the same way if it was myself or a loved one. You want to do everything that you can, right? And so if mm-hmm. there's this false sense of hope of just take this, this is going to do it. Absolutely. That it makes sense that people want to jump on that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. And one more quote unquote natural approach, which goes down a rabbit hole.
Let's all take a deep breath. Yeah.
That one may not be very natural at all. Two, I mean, I don't want to say that chemo is at all natural, but a lot of chemotherapy drugs are derivative of plants.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's an interesting side note there that no, it's not natural, but keep in mind that some supplements might not also be all that natural either, and that we need to treat them as medication and drugs and check to make sure they aren't going to fight or compete with the actual treatment that you're going to get.
Yeah. What do people mean, or from your experience, what you see when people say, I want to take a natural approach? What does that look like to people?
Oh, man, it goes across the board. So it's a pretty big spectrum when I hear that. Some people want to forego conventional therapy and do other alternative approaches. Mm-hmm. So most of those people, I mean, I don't align with that approach.
The alternative medicine, mm-hmm. kind of that functional medicine approach. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. So yeah, the functional medicine is also kind of in a spectrum as well. So some mm-hmm. things can really work well with treatment and after treatment, and some things compete for both energy, mind space, and, you know, food messages. Mm-hmm. So it really depends on the type of message, the goal of the client or the patient, and how they can all work together. But there are definitely some practices, things outside of food that can absolutely help people through treatment, more of a complementary approach versus an alternative. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the natural approach, usually when I hear that, I need to ask about 100 questions.
Just 100. Yeah.
Just 100, just to clarify. Yeah. To get really down to what's driving this thought. Mm-hmm. What have you tried in the past? And can we find something that actually works for your body and for your mind? And I know a lot of it's, you know, fear driven. I just don't want this to ever happen again. I totally get that. But some of these modalities, some of these treatments, there's no guarantee there either. So mm-hmm. what can we do to talk about that and find something that feels good, increases quality of life, allows for community and socialization, you know, when we can, post-COVID and all
Depending
that.
Depending on the time that you're listening to this episode. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. But getting really down to what's the driving force there can tell me a lot about their definition of natural.
That's so interesting. So tell us, how can intuitive eating help someone going through cancer treatment? Mm-hmm. Like somebody, you know, gets the diagnosis and, you know, obviously there's many different types of cancer mm-hmm. itself. So how do you even start with that?
That is a great question, because overall, all of the principles are likely not helpful mm-hmm. during active treatment. And the two that I'm thinking of specifically are hunger and fullness. So a lot of chemotherapies, depending on where your radiation field is on your body, it can really affect your appetite. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to ask someone to start exploring their hunger when those signals are likely really diminished, non-existent. And, you know, now there's that added layer of, did you feel hunger before? Were you a yo-yo dieter? Were you paying attention so much to external rules that you kind of don't know what hunger feels like anyway? Mm-hmm. So that's not something we can really work with. On the flip side, fullness is something that really is hard to focus on during treatment, because a lot of treatments will leave you feeling full, will affect your GI system. So maybe you aren't going to the bathroom as much, not having as many bowel movements. And that can really lead to a feeling of fullness that, hey, well, I don't feel hungry. I have a lot of fullness feeling. According to intuitive eating, I just shouldn't eat, right? I should just wait until these signals return. And that is absolutely not the case. We need to remember that self-care and nourishing the body is part of that. And we explore what it looks like to eat outside of hunger signals, to experience increased fullness past what your baseline level of fullness is right now. And what can we do to help you get the energy amounts you need, the protein amounts you need, and things that will really help you go and do your best during treatment. Mm-hmm. And it looks different. But I do know that making peace with food, absolutely across the board, is one of the biggest things that we can do to allow all foods into the picture. So to open up the pantry and know that you have access to any of those foods there. And then knowing that there can be side effects that will limit the amount of foods, the types of foods that sound good, that work. Like, you're probably not going to want, you know, buffalo wings when you have mouth sores. So that food's going to be something that we pause because it doesn't feel good in your body. Mm-hmm. But hey, you know what? Toast or rice or things that, you know, are sometimes looked really down upon may become staples in your diet during treatment. And that's fine. That we need to allow all foods so that when those treatment side effects hit, it will automatically limit the types of foods you can eat, but more in support of your body than feeling like, you know, oh, no, I have to eat all these other foods. They may not align with what your body feels like it can tolerate right now.
Mm-hmm. You bring up such a good point that it's, if you have this fear of food, if you have this restrictive mindset about, you know, I can only eat these certain foods, right? Or I can only eat plant-based. So you're already limited. And then you're limited by your individual appetite and what sounds good. Right. That can lead to so much more stress.
And then what can I eat at that point? You know, I remember specific people who really wanted to have very certain kind of drinks, like, let's go back to smoothies, but you know, veggie based smoothies with, you know, protein powder added, which is great. And we'd have conversations at the start of treatment where, yes, absolutely, that sounds like something you enjoy and you like that. And for right now, that's going to work. But let's talk about in the future when your mouth is going to be on fire, you're going to have sores in your mouth, and everything's going to taste terrible. Can we put a plan in place where we can transition from this, you know, high plant-based shake to something that you're going to tolerate, that isn't going to burn your mouth, that isn't going to taste horrible? I want you to throw it back up. What can we do instead? Because that time will happen, and it's going to happen in about 3 weeks. So what can we do to help you transition to something that, you know, maybe isn't something you would normally eat or normally drink, but that's what your body needs right now. This is how you can support yourself.
You mentioned appetite, GI issues, like mouth sores. What are some of the other challenges that patients face with this diagnosis? It sounds like physical challenges, but also I'm curious about some of the psychological challenges that you see.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot. And I probably don't even know the tip of the iceberg as far as all the emotions and the feelings that go on. But I know that just the stress from treatment itself, it's a full-time job.
The schedule,
it's hard. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if people are getting radiation, it's usually a one time a day, 5 days a week. for anywhere from 3 weeks to 7 weeks. You know, yeah, chemo on top of that, your infusion may be anywhere from, you know, maybe it's an injection, but maybe it's 2 hours, maybe it's a full day. And planning all of that out, you may not be able to drive if you are taking, you know, pain medications. That limits your ability to operate a vehicle. So planning all of that out, like planning food to bring to the infusion center. And now I haven't worked in an infusion center during COVID. So I don't even know if that's changed how that looks, like bringing in food, having visitors, having someone with you that can help you pass the time. That's may not be allowed right now. So do you have someone who can go grab you food? All of these micro decisions around something you do not want to make decisions about can be so mentally taxing. And then adding the food piece on, the worry about everything that passes my lips and I put into my body, is this going to be something that's helpful or harmful? And having those really, you know, visceral reactions to food and the way that we nourish our bodies can be really, really tough. Adding on the side effects, adding on all the things, you know, financial stress. It's so much. It's so big. And there are so many emotions that I absolutely encourage anyone going through treatment, after treatment, find a counselor who understands and has worked with people who have faced a cancer diagnosis, because mm-hmm. that level of support is so, so, so beneficial.
You mentioned the fear during, but then also after. How does, you know, nutrition and intuitive eating kind of evolve after, you know, let's say someone's in remission, they're, you know, their cancer's gone. What does that look like after that?
It really depends on the person and the treatment that they've been through. So some of the treatments take a more physical toll on the body and change the body in a physical way, can have really long lasting side effects. So let's say someone who has a head and neck cancer and has had chemotherapy and radiation, the dry mouth that comes with that type of treatment may never go away.
Oh, wow. So finding, I remember my very first job out of college was working for a company, you probably are familiar with them, where I was basically a tube feeding coach. And I remember just being like mind blown by this whole field of, we would put G-tubes in people. For the listener, that's just a, you know, feeding tube into your stomach as a preventative, because they, like you said, they were going to have those mouth sources issues eating. And so, you know, let's say that they're able to get that G-tube removed, right? They maintained weight during treatment. They get it removed. Like, I think of that person, like, what a weird, challenging transition to go from not even eating food, like feeding through liquids through your stomach, to then being able to eat again, like mentally too.
Yeah, the transition can feel really different for everyone. So with the dry mouth from that population, you can also, you know, continue to experience taste changes for months. In fact, being part of some of the support groups and talking with people who are newly diagnosed, going through active treatments, 5 years, 10 years out, there are some people who still experience changes to their taste. Like, I can't eat pepper. It burns still after 5 years. Or I can't have this food because it tastes terrible. Or I have to put spicy stuff on every food because I still have really diminished taste. So that absolutely gets in the way of finding satisfaction with food. So we really look at the treatment that someone's had, what the projection of healing looks like, and some of those very lasting side effects. How can we work with someone to really find some satisfaction? It may not be in the taste sensation. It may look more like texture, mouthfeel, temperature, eye appeal, you know, and at the tenet of finding satisfaction with food is so big with intuitive eating, but sometimes that looks a little bit different. And we have to work within parameters, you know, some limitations about what food means to people, how it tastes, you know, what the story is around food after treatment. But let's say someone does recover to a point where things taste normal, their appetite feels like it returns, and, you know, then we can really look fully into embracing the intuitive eating principles, working through many of the principles at the same time. And I will say, you know, the gentle nutrition principle in normal, we want to kind of hold that one on till the end, right? So that when we start looking at the nourishing piece of food and bringing that on the table, that it doesn't really feel like a diet. However, I will say with cancer nutrition, that's kind of where the medical nutrition therapy part comes in. And mm-hmm. we may need to include foods that I would normally say, no, we'll wait on that for a bit. But there may be medically necessary talks about this kind of food will help your body heal. How can we incorporate that in most days? What would sound good? What would feel good within these parameters so that we can, you know, support your body the best way possible? So bringing in that gentle nutrition piece is absolutely part of most everyone's cancer nutrition journey, because we need to pay attention to specific things. Sometimes it's macronutrients, sometimes it's the micronutrients. So, you know, the carbohydrates, we need a certain amount of protein. And sometimes it's this chemotherapy has affected your magnesium, your potassium. Mm-hmm. These kind of foods may be able to help. Do you like anything on this list? How do you think we can add something from this list into your eating pattern most days? But the intuitive eating principles, really, the person going through the journey of intuitive eating after cancer kind of guides what principles we talk about when. Mm-hmm. You know, respecting the body, finding some of that allyship with the body as opposed to being at war with the body. I mean, mm-hmm. we know how common war analogies are with cancer.
Yeah.
How does that make people feel? Do you want to be at war with your body? Does it feel right to feel like there's such a disconnect between, well, this is what I have to do against my body? How does it feel like you can take care of yourself when you're at odds with your physical body? And there's a lot of discussion around that. There can be discussion around weight. That's absolutely a topic that I have with many, many of, mm-hmm. of the clients. And it really depends. You know, some people will need help and assistance gaining weight. And then some people will need help and assistance nourishing their bodies, respecting their bodies, regardless of their current size, their body mm-hmm. type.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially when there's, like you said, there's so many messages saying mm-hmm. that you can control it. You can control your weight. Yeah. You can control, you know, if you just control this one piece, and mm-hmm. what a challenging time period when there is a lot out of your control, that it's really the opposite.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I remember one patient in particular who was going through treatment for head and neck, had a feeding tube. So I knew exactly what this person was able to put into their body. Based on the information they provided, that was not being manipulated. They were not underreporting or overreporting. And they were eating or infusing through that feeding tube well under the amount they needed.
Because they could. Because it's really interesting. Keep going.
And at first we saw that, yeah, this person had a lot of significant weight loss, right? And we're like, oh no, we need to find a way to increase the amount of tube feeding you can put through that tube, because it is absolutely affecting how you go through treatment and how you're healing. Mm-hmm. And despite, you know, GI issues and probably some other messages that, you know, hey, this is a time I can lose weight, why would I want to stop this process? Mm-hmm. They eventually did stop losing weight. Did this person increase their calorie and protein needs? No. They did not. It was still, I want to say, 30% of what they needed. to maintain weight, but yet they stopped losing. And to me, that was just such a real picture of this person's body is protecting them. Mm-hmm. And their metabolism is now so slowed down that even despite all of those extra needs that we have during this particular kind of treatment, they stopped losing weight. It wasn't because they were able to better nurse their bodies. And it broke my heart in a way because, oh, yeah, this doesn't follow that pattern that we think that it always will. Mm-hmm. Like, you aren't getting enough, we're going to see it in your weight. Sometimes that doesn't happen.
I so empathize for, you know, that patient you're describing, because again, what a thing that you're going through where there's so much that's out of your control. Well, no wonder this person felt like, well, this is one thing I can't control. And, mm-hmm. you know, if weight has been an issue in body mm-hmm. prior to treatment, well, absolutely. No wonder you're going to want to control that piece. But you bring up such a good point and picture of the body's really smart. You can't, mm-hmm. you cannot outsmart biology. It will, mm-hmm. it will win every time. And it, ultimately the body's on our side. That's interesting.
Right. Exactly. And it was just so interesting. And I'm like, okay, well, I bet that it's very likely that this person has dieted throughout mm-hmm. their lives. And the body is like, oh yeah, no, I got you. Like, we're good. We're going
this.
To make sure exactly that we're going to protect you in these places. And this person, it took much longer for them to heal after mm-hmm. they were done because the nourishment piece wasn't there despite maintaining their weight. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they were still undernourishing.
Oh, yeah.
But the body was adapting to maintain. Yeah. Exactly. That's really interesting. So many golden nuggets today. You are a wealth of information, and I hope, you know, listeners, just a lot of takeaways, but ultimately, you know, for someone listening, how can family members or friends, you know, whoever's listening, best support someone who has just received a cancer diagnosis?
A good question. First thing, please do not offer them diet advice. Please do not.
Thank you.
If the patient, your loved one, has questions about them, find someone like me that mm-hmm. can provide you reliable information to guide you in the nutrition part of this journey. Searching through Google, searching all sorts of, you know, websites, you know, oh, well, this supplement's done this, this, that. It is overwhelming and unhelpful. I can't tell you how many times I've had patients bring to me paperwork or ideas like, oh, well, my family member said I should do this. What do you think about that? Like, you know, whether I'm familiar with it or not, I'm like, yeah, you don't need this extra burden. Mm-hmm. So what I'm going to advise you to do is tell any friend or family member that you're not interested in anything like this. And here's my number as the dietitian. You can provide them my phone number. They can come directly to me. I will tell them yes, no, maybe so. And let's leave you out of this because we don't need to overwhelm you further with information that is likely incredibly unhelpful. So let's narrow that information down. I also have had people tell me that, you know, it's really helpful when people just send notes, messages, text messages, and make sure to put, you do not have to respond.
Oh, that's a good one.
Please don't pressure. Like, you may not feel like you're pressuring your loved one to respond, but they may feel the pressure to do so. How about if you want to send a note of encouragement, you don't need to respond to this. I wanted to share blah, blah, blah with you. And let that be. You know, care packages can be very helpful. Asking the family member. So if the person who is diagnosed with cancer, asking, you know, the husband, the wife, the friend, someone else, what this person may need, because it's really hard to come up with that information on the fly. Mm-hmm. Also, if you want to help, don't just give that blanket statement. Let me know if you need help. No. Mm. That is so unhelpful. Mm-hmm. You can ask either the person or one of their loved ones, their members, can I help with food? Can I help with transportation? Can I help with specific things? And then if one of those items is picked, okay, I'm available XYZ. I can help on these dates. I can help in this time frame. Let's make a plan so that it's not just, oh, I'm here for you. I support you. Let me know if you need any help. And then perhaps the person's going to reach out. And you're like, oh, but I can't.
We don't always like to ask for help.
Exactly.
You know, we feel like a burden. So exactly. It's like take that burden off of somebody by that decision.
Take the initiative.
Yeah, that decision making.
Right, exactly. And, you know, if someone is going through treatment and you're not sure what they want to eat, what they can tolerate, ask a loved one. I encourage them to reach out to me in the cancer center so that I can provide them recipes or ideas of foods that may be tolerated. But don't be hurt if it doesn't work, if it doesn't go down, if it's too salty, if there's too much seasoning, if it's not the right food, if it's not a food that works. Like, this is a really, really sensitive time for a lot of people. Maybe gift cards, you know, contacting your loved one. Hey, I'm going to, you know, do a DoorDash or a Grubhub, whatever is in your area. I want to buy you dinner tonight. Do you have a preference or should I just, you know, send something over? Making a lot of those decisions or at least narrowing down the decisions can really, 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 really help. And so those are probably some of the biggest ones that I've had clients mention that have been helpful. I mean, just really reaching out, being more specific with the type of stuff that we can provide. And also knowing that you, as someone who cares about this person with cancer, you're not here to fix anything. If this person needs you just to sit and listen and not try to fix. Is that possible? Can you do that? You know, can you take on and sit with some of these emotions, some of this heaviness that may be there without trying to offer solutions? Because a lot of times there just aren't solutions.
What do they call that? The writing reflex. We want to just make everything right. And sometimes you just gotta be, and that's enough.
Just be. Exactly. Just be, just sit and listen. And that can be so very helpful.
Such good information. Like I said, so many golden nuggets, you know, so appreciate your knowledge and then this conversation. Where can our listeners find you and learn more?
So the best place to find me is on my website. I'm somewhat active on social media platforms, but honestly, if you want to find out the latest information, I keep my website up to date. So the information and that address is www.cancernutritionsolutions.com. Head over there. You can sign up for my email newsletter where I provide some of these, you know, dispelling myths, just basic information, more ideas about how the intuitive eating journey can be connected with your cancer journey, and so much more. So I'd say that'd be about the best place to find me.
And we'll be sure to link to that in the show notes. So I want to finish up with a little rapid fire before you go. So tell us, what is your favorite podcast or book right now?
You know, my favorite book is learning more about polyvagal theory. So,
tell us.
Yeah. So polyvagal theory is more about the neuroscience and finding safety in our body. So how our, you know, our thoughts and some of our external environment affects how we feel in our body. So, you know, our emotions find a physical place in our body. And that can be so very helpful to really discover that when going through treatment after treatment, to identify some of those feelings and to use the body to work through that. So I am really interested in this subject. I'm looking at different resources, learning more about this polyvagal theory and somatic approach and using that as part of my counseling. So that right now is kind of the thing on my desktop.
So interesting. Love it. Sweet or salty?
It depends. You know, I would say
like, I'm an intuitive eater. What a loaded question.
Totally. So when I used to be totally sweet, but once I really started to be more mindful, like looking at the intuitive eating approach and looking at it from, do I want heavy, light, rich, creamy? It changes. So sometimes I'm all about sweets, and there are other days like, no, thank you. I want something salty. I want something crunchy. I want something with a different satisfaction appeal for it. So yeah,
that's a great answer. Love it.
It goes across the board.
Something you want less of in 2021.
I would say weight stigma in cancer care.
Snaps for that. A freaking man. That's huge. So on the flip side, something you want more of in 2021?
Oh, getting back to community, connecting on a different level, on a more personal level, community for sure.
Absolutely. Love that. And last, what's the best thing that's happened to you this week?
So my sister, who I adore, she's a nurse, and she received her second final COVID vaccine this week.
Yay!
Besides a sore arm, no side effects. All is good. I'm so thrilled that this is part of something we can discuss right now. And I'm so encouraged that this is something going forward.
Yeah. That's the best thing that I've heard this week as well. I love to hear that.
Yay.
Well, Amber, again, thank you so much for your time, your knowledge. And like I said, we'll be sure to link all your resources that we talked about, your website, all that good stuff in our bio so you guys can find her.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Katie.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. If you liked this episode, don't forget to share it with a friend. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at Fit Friends Happy Hour. Talk to you next time.